everybody. Welcome to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby. First of all, thanks for downloading the podcast. I really appreciate it. That's why we do all of the things we do, to get this into your ear somehow. The way you put it in your ear, that's ultimately up to you, but I've done my job if you're listening to this. So first off, thank you. This is the type of show that if I had all the money in the world, if I had all the resources in the world, it is exactly the type of show I'd be producing. I'm very, very happy with it. And it's essentially a two-parter, not counting this little snippet in the beginning. The first part of the show is a conversation with Nathan Jurgensen. Nathan is a PhD candidate at the University of Maryland, essentially getting his PhD in social media. He's a very, very good thinker. God, there's got to be a better word for good thinker that's not intellectual. Anyways, he's aces with the brain, and he explains the role of technology in the Occupy Wall Street movement, specifically last night's debacle that happened in New York City on Occupy Wall Street with the whole police and the throwing away of the books. And really, you're going to throw away books and no one's going to... Anyways, you'll hear about that. And the second part of the show is the 8x8 that we recorded last night at the Looking Glass Lounge. It was hands down my favorite 8x8 that we've done in DC yet, and all of the performers were excellent. And rather than give you the entire like 2-hour show, I cut it up into like 25 minutes, so it's like 1 to 3 minutes of each performer. And from start to finish, it's very, very good. I open with a very dumb yet passionate rant about something I am very passionate about. I'll let you wait and hear what that is. Then Sarah Donnelly is very, very funny. Sandra Beasley read poems. Yes, I know I'm not a fan of poems. It'll make sense. You'll figure it out. If not, I mean, if you hate it, give it 2 minutes, because then after the 2 minutes, you have a brand new person. You have Samson McCormick, who's been in the live show before, who I adore, and it involves Q-tips and an asshole. So that's a thing to look forward to. How could you not want to listen to a story about Q-tips and an asshole? Then Peter Heineman and Adam Friedland do a sketch of sorts. Yeah. They sketch their shorts. It's fantastic. Then Aaron Ryan tells the jokes, and people laugh at the jokes. And then S.M. Schrake, one of D.C.'s finest storytellers. You'll get to hear the first 2 minutes of one of his soon-to-be well-known stories. He's been on This American Life and all that great stuff. So if you know what a podcast is, which I'm sure you do because this is in your ear, that's what S.M. does. And then Jessica Brodkin probably gets the biggest laughs of the night. I don't know. In terms of like audio quality laughs, yes, she has definitely the loudest laughs, but she was also the last comedian to go. And by that point in the night, people had been drinking, so I don't know if it was... She's very funny. That's what I'm trying to say. And closing out the show is Johnny Grave. So that's this show. That is the show that you are listening to right now. It'll be Nathan, and then those 8 performers. And the lists of all those performers that I just rattled off is in the show description. So if you want to follow them on Twitter and things like that, please do. I don't know if you guys know this, but I write a weekly column for this website called Brightest Young Things, and my most recent column was about how I wanted to get a ticket to the Foo Fighters show at 11-11-11 at the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C., and I want to say that thanks to that column, I was able to go to the Foo Fighters show without having to spend money on something that what I would have really been angry about spending money on. I've read many, many, many reviews about this Foo Fighters show. I was at the Foo Fighters show. To be fair, I only stayed for the first 90 minutes of their 3-hour set, so I'm sure they were transcendent in those last 90 minutes, but those first 90 minutes, not so transcending. Here's what happens. Dave Grohl comes out on the stage, yeah, he's running around, woo, yeah, and he plays the first 4 songs really well, and everyone's all pumped up, and then every 3-minute song got turned into a 10-minute song. And here's how. So it's like, chorus, chorus, chorus. And then, while he's doing the part, that's when he runs across the arena. He literally runs down the length of the ice rink. And then there's a riser that comes out of the sound booth area. And for no fucking reason. It's the exact same thing. Not the exact same thing, but it's a lot of the stuff that Kurt Cobain would have, hated. And that's made it so much better because Dave Grohl won because he didn't swallow a shotgun. Now, Pat Smear is back in the band. Pat Smear, probably my favorite of the Foo Fighters. He was the original, not original, because Dave Grohl was the original guy. Anyways, Pat Smear was the first hired gun guitarist. Since then, there have been 4 other hired gun guitarists. Pat Smear is back in the band. He is now the third guitarist, if Dave Grohl's number 2. Whatever. He's back in the band. There's no reason for him to be in the band. It's fantastic. And he seems to be on the fence. He he is summing up all of the feelings I had about watching that Foo Fighters show. It's fun. I'm glad to see somebody happy. But really, these aren't the best songs he's ever written. Anyways, moving on, I want to thank the readers at Brightest Junk Things for getting me a ticket to that show. I really appreciate it. The column I wrote before the Foo Fighters show was about how I should be the next Doctor in the Doctor Who series. And I am surprised how proud I am of that stupid column. So please give it a gander. Ooh, that's an awful turn of phrase. That's on the website. All those columns are on the website. There will be a Doctor Who movie. I don't know if anyone's heard. There's a Doctor Who movie coming out. They're not going to follow the television show, which is an awful idea. But I think this is a great way for me to become the Doctor. So if you're a big Hollywood executive, specifically of the British persuasion, and you love this podcast, look no further. I'm your Doctor. On Monday, November 21st, I will be at the Hungry Brain hosting and recording a holiday album full of comedy and music. So I'm a big Christmas songs, holiday songs fan. If you listen to the show, you know I could care less about religion. That's not my bag. Who says that? Who says things like that? Anyways, that's not my bag. Oh, what a dick's phrase. Anyways, I'm not into that type of stuff. I'm not opposed to it anymore. I just don't care. Anyways, I love the music. I can't get enough of the music. So I've asked a lot of really, really good bands and friends of friends and friends of friends to perform. They're all going to perform 1 to 2 holiday tunes, and this will be recorded. And I also have stand-up comedians coming up and telling jokes and stories and antidotes about the holidays, and all that will be recorded. And then this album will be released, hopefully, fingers crossed, the day of Thanksgiving. So you can listen to it with your family when you're eating the turkey and the thing, and there's a family moment. No, I'm not going to talk about that. Let's just talk about the bands performing. We have Kitchen Table Illinois, Tiger Cry, Angela James, the Hallamays. Ooh, I've been getting into the Hallamays. I'm really digging this band. Dan Moore from Wells Next to the Sea, Mike Pritchard from Otter Petter, Trevor McSpadden from the Hoyle Brothers, Rock Falls. Ooh, the Rock Falls set's going to be great. Seth Vanek and Cross Records. So those are the musicians we have. We might add one or two, but there's already way too many, so we probably won't do that. And then the comics that we have going up are Joe McAdam, Joe Quazala, Aaron Weaver, Emerson Dameron, Chad Briggs, Dan Ronan, Lisa Traeger, Jeff Steinbrenner, Mike Leibowitz, Renee Schultz, Megan Gailey, and Danny Callis. So I cannot recommend that show enough. Here's the thing about the show that I'm even more excited for. If you come to the show and you want to get in the holiday spirit, bring a coat. It's also a coat drive. If you have an extra coat lying around the house, we're going to give it to the homeless because you have an extra coat lying around. You might as well feel good about it. Don't just throw it away. So that's a lot of stuff. To summarize, thank you, readers. The Foo Fighters show was extreme. Oh, the Foo Fighters show was fun. I should have clarified earlier. It was a great show. I loved it. It was awful. I loved it. Great show. Thank you. Read the other columns. Doctor Who, me, please, British casting agents. Come to the Brain on Monday in Chicago. If you can't come to the Brain, download the album for free on Thanksgiving Day. And then all the other stuff is on the website, youmethemeverybody.com. So without further ado, here's Nathan Jurgensen and I talking about the Occupy Wall Street movement, specifically the raid from last night. Following that, the best of 8x8, the 11/14/2011 edition. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. It's November 15th. It's the day of the Occupy Wall Street police movement, you might say.
Raid, sweeping, the raid? Clearing.
Would you call it a raid?
I'll call it a raid, yeah.
It happened at 1 a.m. today.
Right.
And why don't you give the listener an update about this?
The short of it is that the police, a massive number of police decked in riot gear, sort of the most intense gear that you can imagine, basically made in the sort of post 9/11 anti-terrorism, anti-drug cartel get up. I'm trying to set up the scene of these people are coming.
So like a stormtrooper.
Sort of like a stormtrooper coming at unarmed, hippie, nonviolent protesters. I think that.
Well, you're assuming everyone was nonviolent.
Yeah, I mean, the Occupy movement has almost unanimously across the country been a nonviolent movement.
Okay.
And everybody knows that. These are unarmed, nonviolent.
I don't think everybody knows that.
The police, everybody involved in the
everyone
raid
involved knows that.
Knows that that's the case.
Okay.
So I think that, to start it off, that juxtaposition between heavily armed stormtroopers versus cold kids in a tent, I think is important.
Okay.
Symbolically. Maybe that'll be the theme of what we could talk about, is the symbolism and the imagery that comes out of all of this.
Well, so, I've seen about 50 potential punk rock 7-inch covers from the last 24 hours of news.
Right. It's. I think the police were handled the symbolic nature of all this very poorly. So, but let's keep moving through what happens. So that'd be point one on the symbolism of all of this. Are the very overly armed police versus very underarmed protesters? That's step one. So they moved in about 1 a.m. On a Monday night, so we know that this is the numbers are going to be very small in the park. Mm-hmm. Middle of the night on a Monday, about 200 people are there. About half of them, maybe the slight majority of them, left pretty much immediately.
They were given a warning.
They were given a warning in the form of flyers. Mm-hmm.
Did they get an hour's notice, 10 minutes notice? Do you know how much notice they got?
I don't know. I don't know the exact number, but I think it was going to be more than a half hour, less than 6 hours. So somewhere there. I don't know the exact.
So it was after midnight, probably.
Yeah. Roughly
it was dark
there.
Out.
Yeah, once the people that were going to be camping out were there.
Once the tourists were gone.
Yeah, once the tourists were gone and the people that don't spend the night there, they were gone. And so the overnight people were told their private property, you know, anything that was there was going to be thrown in the garbage.
Okay.
So take your private property, take yourself, get yourself out of the park. Then the police came and the protesters had their last chance to get out. Most of them did. A group of around 70 of them holed up by taking a lot of the tables and infrastructure that was in the park and making sort of a fort and walled themselves in, and that was dismantled by the police. And last I heard was, you know, I've heard numbers between 30 and 70 were arrested. I think some of those numbers are still being hashed out today on the number of people who were actually arrested. So they were arrested, and the park was effectively cleared, and the police created a barricade, a sort of a wall, a block in every direction from the park. So you can't even get to the edge of the park. Yeah, you can get within about a block of the park today. And so to keep people from really rallying, trying to get back in the park, even though those people that were removed were told that we're going to clean the park overnight, you can come back in the morning.
Yeah.
That was what they were told. And so far you cannot get back into the park.
Okay.
So yeah, that's where we're at right now. That's what happened. The police were successful in removing the people from the park. The park is now empty. They're hosing it down. It's gone. Infrastructure, all that's gone.
We've talked about this before, and you've written about this before, that you were thinking that the whole movement would be over once it gets cold, or at least drastically diminished. But I saw today that you wrote, this actually is going to reinvigorate people, and if anything, make the case stronger.
Right. I meant that people wouldn't be sleeping overnight at the park. I thought very few, if any, we're going to make it through the winter sleeping at the at the park. In fact, I was even told by people at the park that this is Occupy Wall Street, not Sleep at Wall Street.
Okay.
So they were already had in their minds, what's the next step? When it gets really cold, are they going to move to other occupations in warmer cities? Or are they going to change their tactic to deal with the cold? And what I think could have happened was, if the police had have just stayed out of all this, that as the temperatures dropped, so would the numbers, and it would have been this slow deflation trickling away of the park, and it would have been kind of a slow death to the movement.
Yeah.
And I think it really could have tamped the energy, and instead what the police did, this will be point number two on the mismanagement of and the economics of power here, right? What they did was they gave, instead of the slow trickling away, now everybody's been removed from the park. There's a lot of energy. People are angry. People are upset. And really what they did was, instead of this inevitable slow trickling away, now we have it. They don't have to worry about what to do in the cold. You know, how are people going to sleep overnight in the cold? Now that problem is gone.
Okay.
Now they have a new problem.
What's that?
Is now they have all this energy. What's the new tactic? Sleeping overnight was symbolically really big. It did a lot to change the national conversation. It was omnipresent. There was always people sleeping there. Now that they don't have that, at least on Wall Street and in other places, Oakland and in Canada, they're sweeping a lot of these occupations. What are they going to do? What's the strategy moving forward? But I think November 15th will go down as an inflection point of the tactic of sleeping overnight and now into something new. Assuming that this doesn't, these occupations being cleared away, maybe people are going to be, they're going to lose their spirit, lose their energy. That's one way that could go. Or these protests have just been inflamed and instigated, which is what I think is going to be the case. And now there's all this new energy. What's going to be the new tactic? Is it going to be, they're going to do big marches? I think that's an old tactic, and I don't think that's going to be highly effective. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people marched against the Iraq War in 2003, and that didn't do anything.
No.
Big, the immigration marches to Chicago, I was there, you might have been around at the time, and I don't think a big march that's is going to do it, because marches are all about space. You're marching in space. Look at all these people in space, but they're not about time. They don't last very long.
Okay.
Occupy so far has also been about time.
Okay, why
and,
not?
And they have to find a way to keep that as a variable.
Okay, what was the paper you were writing last night?
The paper I'm working on, it was due today. I'll submit it today, and is about the role of technology, specifically social media and cell phones, but as well as other technologies. I think the other technologies are really important. We've talked about this on the podcast before. Are lo-fi technologies, be it the newspapers, the libraries. I mean, we should get to the library.
We'll get to the library.
The library was thrown in the garbage last night. There's an embracing of low tech as well as the people's microphone, as well as occupying physical space, human, retro, vintage, low tech, non-electronic technologies. Those are really the most important technologies for the movement. But that's not to downplay the role of social media, not to downplay the role of smartphones, especially in capturing police brutality.
Mm-hmm.
Another point we should get to is the fact that the police didn't allow traditional journalists to see the raid. All we have are the protester shot videos.
Well, I'm trying to pull up my tweets from last night. All I had was me being stupid about Whitney and Community, and then doing the show, and then once I got home, nothing. And that's about 12:30. And then I wake up today, and my timeline is just 5 hours of comedians and journalists talking about Occupy and what happened. So I feel like I obviously was not there. I obviously was not watching it live. I had no idea what was going on, but I have I have an idea of what happened because of it. Why do you think that they're trying to limit journalists' use of anything? Why do you think they're trying to limit the technology down there? What's the point?
This is the old way that you would control information is simply by not allowing journalists in. That worked for a really, really long time. And you know, the police screaming at journalists saying, "I have credentials, I'm a journalist, let me in." And they said, "Tonight you're not a journalist."
Okay.
And so that was the old way that you could control information. But they don't seem to understand that... The story of a protest is told by the protesters.
Who's the they in this situation?
We could say Bloomberg. Bloomberg has taken the mayor of New York City. He said
from
that this
Bloomberg
is all his
News
idea.
And Bloomberg Media. I mean, the dude owns media.
I mean, him as a mayor, the NYPD as a force. They executed a raid, sweeping, a clearing of the park. And they did it by limiting, and there's about 13 journalists I followed on Twitter that were from New York that were there, and all unanimously spoke of not being allowed to cover the story, many of them being roughed up pretty bad by the police, a lot of violence. But the irony is, and this is, we'll put this as point number three on the poor use of symbolic symbolism and imagery coming out of this raid, was by not allowing traditional journalists into this raid, into this dismantling, traditional journalists being kind of a third party. They're not the police, they're not the protesters, but in a somewhat objective third party. By not allowing them in, the only imagery that we have comes from the protesters.
Okay.
So all the videos that we can watch, whatever the news is going to cover on all of this, comes from the perspective of the protester. So as you watch it through the eyes of a protester. That's symbolically big, whether you're conscious of it or not as a viewer. The fact that you watch it through the perspective of the protester is really big. And that's a massive mistake on the part of the NYPD, Bloomberg. Now that we're watching this through the eyes of the protester, and it's the police over and over again in this whole occupation movement seem to be unaware or don't care about the fact that these protesters turned cyborgs are well connected. They have cameras. They're tweeting. They have video. They can shoot video. They're live. You can watch the arrests happen on live stream. You can watch it happen live. That's changed. That means that tactic of not allowing the traditional journalists in doesn't work the way it used to work.
Did you read the press release that Bloomberg sent out today?
Yes, I did.
It said two reasons why they couldn't stay. One was public health.
Right.
And the other was they were never supposed to be there in the first place to stay overnight.
Right.
The overnight thing, why not bust that the first night? Why not deal with that right away?
Right. That
I'm asking you. You were there.
That's what... They're kicking themselves for not busting it the first night. They thought
didn't
it
he
would...
also hold a press conference early on saying we support them and we, like it's the public.
Bloomberg right never came out and support.
Not support. Sorry, them, but... didn't want to kick them out.
Yeah, I mean they.
It's their right.
I mean, when this all started fairly close to the, you know, not long after the riots in the United Kingdom, mm-hmm. there was riots in Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
and our government was saying all these wonderful things about the Arab Spring.
Yeah,
and I don't think. They had an idea that that kids would be sleeping in the park for months. I shouldn't say kids. It's not just kids down there. But people would be sleeping in the park for months.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that would became this big tourist attraction, it changed the national conversation. At the time, nobody thought that was the case. And in fact, it wasn't until the police brutality and the Brooklyn Bridge and the macing and all of that that any of this really made any noise. It was just some people down on Wall Street who mm-hmm. cares. And they thought they could ignore it, and then it got really big, and it started really making a difference. It was really changing things in the world, and at least in the public opinion.
Okay, so that explains the first part. But what about the public health thing? You were there. You've referred to these as dirty kids before. It could
I'm
be
not going to say the kids were dirty. I said there was. It was. It smelled weird, and a lot of people were dirty. I'm not calling them. I'm not saying they're dirty people.
So
yeah.
I don't think it's beyond. I don't think it's debatable to say it's not the cleanest place in New York City.
It's not the cleanest place in New York City.
Okay.
Yeah.
So would that be reason enough to clear them out if they let them back in? Is that something that, regardless of what you see the cops doing, because let's admit cops are dumb, why wouldn't that be a good enough reason?
Well, they kept the park very clean. The protesters kept the park
did
very
they?
Clean. Yes, they did.
Okay.
I mean, there was daily cleaning rituals. They knew that was going to be one of the ways that would be used as justification mm-hmm. to kicking them out, and they were on top of that. And also, just, I don't think they wanted to live in dirt. And so I think that's a bit of a cop-out.
Okay.
Literally. And I don't know. It's technically against the law to sleep overnight in that park, to have a tent or a sleeping bag, and they had... the police had been letting them break the law, and then the justification is last night they decided to start enforcing the law.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's the way that the mayor's office would tell it, that they started enforcing the law last night. And, of course, the question is, you know, why last night? When, you know, laws are gray area. In fact, we've seen that for the last month. The mm-hmm. laws are a gray area. Why did they move from one side of the gray area to the other last night?
Was it cold in New York last night? Because in D.C. it was very, very nice out.
It's unseasonably warm. The weather is really supposed to dip next week. We're going to deal with below freezing temperatures next week.
So why not just wait it out? Why today?
That's the real question. Why did they... If they would have waited a couple more weeks, the cold weather might have done a lot of this work for them.
Okay.
I think strategically this ends up being a win for the Occupy movement. I think this is going to re-energize that movement, and actually save them from having to deal with dwindling numbers in the cold weather.
Okay.
I think this ends up being a plus for the Occupy movement.
I've seen more online Twitter, Facebook support for this in the last 24 hours than I have seen in the last 2 months. How
absolutely.
About you?
Yeah, absolutely. The same. I mean, if I can make one more point on the poor use of symbolism by the police department and mayor's office, it'd be point number four. I think four we're on this. The fact that, and I think a lot of people are going to rally around this. We're talking about people rallying around mm-hmm. Occupy in wake of this raid. The police took the massive library.
Is that 5,000 books?
Yeah, about 5,000 books that were donated. And these aren't a bunch of intellectual academics at the park. These are people that are donating and reading these books, and this library is very important. Again, we talk the low-tech mm-hmm. Nature of Occupy, and that was a real point of pride for all the different occupations. Whichever one you visit, they're likely going to have a library, and they take pride in that library, and the police came and took those books and threw them in the garbage. Again, very poor... Poor. This is very symbolic, right? Anytime books symbolize knowledge, and you have the oppressing force come in and take it and throw it away. This is, I think, could be a real
rallying
point.
I think this is a brilliant
point.
Marketing opportunity for Amazon to give away some Kindles to the Occupy movement. Why not?
Right, right. I don't think Kindles would be what the Occupy people are looking for. I think
I would disagree. I think Kindle's a wonderful product, and I think this should
Amazon Kindle
on the show.
Read your
it's
book
free
anyway.
Shipping now. I don't know if you saw that with all the
low price.
It's $200 to have essentially Amazon. The world's knowledge in your hand.
No, instead, I think people should go to Liberty Park tonight and donate books. They're trying to recreate the rebuild the library. But again, destroying the library, this could be something that the protesters can use and rally around, and use this as, you know, this is an inflection point. There's two questions. One, will this dishearten and tamp down the protests, or is this going to inflame and embolden them? And if the latter, what are the new strategies moving forward? If you can't sleep at the park, what can you do?
Okay.
And you know, anytime you watch protests, I think the tactics, the protest strategies are the most interesting thing to watch, and they always have to evolve because the police, the state, whoever, they always will adapt to whatever the tactics are being created, and that's what we're seeing the police are, mm-hmm. have adapted, and now it's up to the protesters to find a new tactic, a new strategy.
Okay. Did you see the Questlove tweets about this, by the way?
No, I didn't. I didn't follow his.
Okay, well, Questlove essentially warned everybody a few hours before this happened. He's like, hey, all these police are assembling, this is weird, and then...
And the Brooklyn Bridge. Yeah.
He was brushed off. And they said, okay, whatever, whatever, and then it actually happened, and now people are... Anyways, that's a non-story for you.
I don't follow enough celebrities. I see everybody's tweeting, oh, Alec Baldwin said this.
Oh, not now.
I just don't care.
No, he just tweeted about it, and the people
I'd rather
him.
Listen to the protesters.
And he tied... Somebody... It was a great article about... They tied it into the... Jay-Z t-shirt. Did you see this?
Yes, he had Occupy All Streets. But not as
brilliant.
Not as some tangential support to Occupy Wall Street,
but rather he tried to sell it
on his website.
As he should.
They took it down pretty immediately and everybody complained. Yeah.
Whatever, who cares? It's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, if...
Somebody's going to cash in. No matter what, somebody's going to cash in on this.
Of course, everything gets branded and sold back. Even critiques of consumer society get sold back to consumer society, hence the Shea t-shirt that you can buy.
Yeah.
Just
so
about
why
anywhere.
Not Jay-Z? What's the problem?
So you think that's a good thing?
Somebody's going to do it. At least you know who the enemy is in this case.
Yeah, I don't think just because you can make money doesn't mean you should.
It's someone's going
someone
to make
will,
money
but
on it.
That whoever that
it
someone
might as
is,
well be hilarious.
I'm not sure if it was that funny or interesting or clever.
What if he gave those out with the Kindles to the kids tonight to make everything better?
www.amazon.com.
Amazon.com.
Get your Kindle today.
Those Jay-Z shirts that I'm sure are in Africa right now for all the teams that lose the Super Bowl and World Series, like the Cleveland Indians World Champions shirts, will be there. Come on, let's make this happen, everybody. Kindle, Jay-Z shirts.
Let me take a sip of my Dr. Pepper. Yeah. Dr. Pepper, only 3 calories.
When is the first official... I bet Jones Soda is behind this movement. There's probably a lot of Jones Soda being sold right now down
Occupy
there.
Yeah, Occupy Movement, brought to you by Blockbuster Video.
Wow, what a difference. Occupy Wall Street. Any final parting words? What should people be paying attention to in the next week or so in terms of the technology aspect of Occupy?
I think people should be thinking about who got to tell the story of this raid. How did the police and the mayor's office, I think what they're going to do is they're going to lose control of the narrative. And why did they lose control of the narrative? And I think we've outlined a few different ways in which they mismanaged the symbolic nature of this whole event.
Okay. There's something missing, though. I don't know if this is going to change minds. I felt like today, no one's really been talking about this, right? Sorry, right. I said last point, but a lot of people that didn't pay attention to it are kind of now not really paying attention to it, but they now sympathize with the people simply because of the things like that we've talked about, like the books being thrown out.
Yeah.
Like the imagery we see. But will this actually translate into anything that we could see? I'm not saying sweeping changes. Right. I'm just saying support for these kids.
So far, Occupy has done so. I mean, they've changed the national conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Income inequality is now a major political point. It's part of the conversation. It wasn't part of the conversation before. They've changed the mood. They've made massive gatherings of political people, not about the Tea Party.
But now they also have people... But now there's cops involved, right?
Yes.
Now there's actually cops involved. It's no longer a theory of a cop. And cops to most
cops
people...
Cops have been involved from the very beginning.
Yes.
That's the only thing the traditional media has covered about Occupy.
There are more people that can sympathize with cops because they know a cop, because they're married to a cop, etc., than they can with the dirty smelling hippie.
I think that the only good press, the only press that Occupy has received at all from the mainstream media has been the various mistakes by police. That's the only thing that this got. In fact, you could even look at the number of news articles.
And isn't that distracting, though?
Distracting from
the movement, the whole idea of it. This is not about cops.
Well, I'll also make the big statement, say there wouldn't be the movement if it wasn't for the police brutality. There wouldn't, Occupy would not be as big as it is today if it wasn't for the mishandling of all this by the police. And this would, I think, likely is going to be another example. You could do a search right now. Go on to Google Trends. Look at how often, how many news articles there are about Occupy, how many times people search Occupy. Look at that upward slanting graph, and Google will place relevant news articles when there's a change, a massive change in the graph, when the line really starts to shoot up, and at each time it's police brutality.
Okay.
So that's the only thing CNN, the New York Times, it's the only thing they know how to cover about Occupy, is police brutality. This is saying that the police threw away the books, the police kicked them out of the park. That's something they know how
to. Not that they were given orders to do so.
Well, this whole action is going to be is something that those mainstream news outlets know how to cover.
Okay.
And so far, the mainstream news has and the corporate top down kind of traditional news outlets they don't know how to deal with this decentralized group of people who are creating their own media and that don't have slogans that they're chanting too much. I mean, there's 99%, but the exact, you know, we want this law to change. They're not doing that kind of, it's not clear. People are constantly, the media is just constantly asking, what is this? I don't get it. They're scratching their heads. They don't know because the Occupy movement has sidestepped traditional media. They don't need traditional media. They're creating their own media. And we're going to see that the same thing happened last night where traditional news media was sidestepped, in fact, blocked, not sidestepped, but literally blocked from being there. And the story is again being told by the Occupy protesters, and I think that's a massive change in the way that protest is covered.
It's an awful day. It's an awful fucking day. It's possibly the worst day in television history. Because my favorite show isn't on in the next season. But Whitney is, everybody! Let's give it up for Whitney, everyone's favorite show! Yes, Whitney can! Yeah, Community is no longer going to be on the NBC schedule. Yeah, I'm a newsbreaker.
What?
I agree. Let's be angry at Whitney. Whitney has a job. She's got two jobs. I don't have any. That's why I'm wearing this festive shirt. I'm hoping that could change things, because it changed things for Whitney. Let me explain Whitney to everyone that's interested. Who should be no one. Okay, so Whitney is this television show for the lowest common denominator. What's the lowest common denominator? Have you been to Target ever? That's it. Going to Target, that makes you see, oh, that's the lowest common denominator. Going to Giant on the way home from this lovely show, because I'll be fucking drunk and be like, I should totally eat a frozen pizza at 1 a.m. on a fucking Monday. Is it Monday? On a Monday night. And that's what I'll do and wonder, why does Whitney have a job? Whitney's probably a very nice person. I probably shouldn't give shit to someone that I've never met. But holy shit, Whitney, really? You're taking away the best sitcom on television, the only show that people are going to actually think about in 20 years, the kind of show that they're going to have like college classes for because it's as good as The Simpsons, but with people, and they're not going to care. No, because Whitney has to exist forever. She's going to kill you. Don't you understand that if you own television, Whitney's going to murder you. She's already murdering you. She's television diabetes. Do you know what diabetes is? I'm sure if you're watching the football game, you know exactly what diabetes is. It's not a knock on people that watch football. I watch football, but let's... Both sides of the line, they're dead by 40. There's a reason for that. This show is not about Whitney yet. Hopefully, our 8 performers can make it about Whitney. This show is about me getting a job. If you have a job to give to me, I'll talk about Whitney nonstop. I've seen 3 minutes of Whitney, by the way. That's enough. You don't need... Oh, I watched like the first half of one of the other shows. She's got two on TV. She's got two shows. The other one's called Two Broke Girls. Woo! And it's set in Brooklyn. Woo! And then one wants to run a cupcake shop. That's the one with the tits that everybody likes. Like, ooh, I love staring at Kat Dennings. There's an internet for that. You don't need to watch her move in a Whitney-produced show. I've become like a shitty Louis C.K. For Sarah Donnelly, everybody, yay! Yes, we can occupy!
Thank you. So it's getting cooler in D.C., and that means the potential for snow is on the rise. And the thing that I hate most about winter, other than the snow itself, is how people act when it snows in D.C., because people freak out. They lose their minds. Like, when people hear it's in the snow here, they act like a woman who thinks she's going to be proposed to. That is the kind of hysteria. People are like, oh my god, oh my god, do you think it's going to snow? Do you think it's going to snow? Today? Like, oh, I think tonight is the night when it's going to finally snow. Do you know if you buy bread and milk, it snows? If you buy bread and milk, it will fucking snow. Because it snowed earlier some places, like for my sister. It needs to fucking snow. I love those people. / myself.
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for Sandra Beasley, everybody.
I'll finish with one other poem following my theme of the evening. That's the theme of my personal life. The theme of the evening is, I've been lucky enough to work full-time as a writer for the last couple of years. I've been touring for this book, I Was the Jukebox, and also a memoir called Don't Kill the Birthday Girl, Tales from an Allergic Life. But before that, in my 20s, I worked at all kinds of odd jobs, which at times were very dignified. I got to be an editor in a magazine, and at times involved doing last-minute runs for laundry or colonoscopy medicine or all kinds of odd, random stuff. So whenever I read this poem, I dedicate it to anybody who's had that moment where you're like, why the hell am I doing this for pay? And it's because you have that other thing that's the thing you really want to be doing for a living. We've all been there. Vocation. For 6 months, I dealt baccarat in a casino. For 6 months, I played Brahms in a mall. For 6 months, I arranged museum dioramas. My hands were too small for the Paleolithic, and when they reassigned me to lichens, I quit. I typed 91 words per minute, all of them help. Yes, I speak Dewey Decimal. I speak Russian, Latin, a smattering of Tlingit. I can balance 7 dinner plates on my arm. All I want to do is sit on a veranda while a hard rain falls around me. I'll file your 1099s. I'll make love to strangers of your choice. I'll do whatever you want as long as I can do it on that veranda. If it calls you, it's your calling, right? Once I asked a broker what he loved about his job, and he said, making a killing. Once I asked a serial killer what made him get up in the morning, and he said, the people.
Hands together, everybody, for Samson McCormick, everybody. Samson, yay! What a thing to play. How you doing, buddy?
I haven't slept well, like, in the last, like, probably 8 or 9 days because I have a cat. And this is what happened.
Yeah!
Who did that?
I have a cat, too. He's a bastard. I never sleep.
Then why did you cheer? Oh my god, we need to send the Asians to your house ASAP. Okay. Let me tell you what, like, okay, because like one of my friends gave her to me, right? So you know, at first like I would spray, cause you know you spray with the water hose and then run into the bed, run into the sofa. And I would do that and you know, she would leave me alone, right? And so like about 3 weeks ago, like, I was in the room, you know, like, doing some research or whatever, and then I went to sleep. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard this, like, noise coming out of the living room. So I just heard, and I was like, what the fuck was that? You know, I thought the Asians were in my house. So, like, I didn't know what was going on. So I just got up, and then, you know, I was walking down the hall, and I was, and so, you know, like when I would go out, you know, she would like kind of like just, you know, run around my leg, and you know, I would like pet her and stuff, and she would lay on her back all slutty and stuff. I would pet her, and she would just be like, you know, and so I didn't know what was going on with her, and I'd be like, well, all right, well, I played, but I'm going back to sleep, and I would go back to sleep, and I'd just say, ah! So I was like, well, something's going on, so I went. Got my laptop out and I got on Google, right? And so I Googled cat keep screaming, right? And so it turns out they said that she was in heat, right? And so I didn't know what heat was, so I'm thinking, you know, since the weather changed, we turned the heat up in the house, I thought she was hot. So, you know, I went in the freezer, got some ice cubes and put that on her. She didn't like that too bad. So I had to get back online again, and I found out when they're in heat, that means, you know, they need some. So I'm like, okay, so now I'm going to have to either buy her another cat or get her spayed or, like, send her outside. And I didn't want to do that because, you know, then she... Okay, let me tell you how cats have sex. So, you know they don't have sex with, like, one other cat, like dog, or one other dog, like dogs do. They have sex with like 7 or 8 cats, and so I didn't want my cat to come in, you know, with a bunch of cats, and then, you know, we have to go on like cat Moria to find the daddy. You know? Like one cat, you know, got like a nappy tail, and you know, another one got blonde fur and blue eyes, you know, it would have been too much. So I just kept getting up hearing this, ah, and I got tired, so I went to the bathroom and got a Q-tip, right? Wait a minute, wait a minute, now, y'all don't even know what I did with the Q-tip. Okay, I fucked that cat. This shit got ridiculous. So we have to get her a cat dildo or something. Oh no, man.
Please put your hands together, ready for Peter Heinemann and Adam Friedland, everybody.
Thank you. Actually, Brandon, can you give us a hand with this?
Yeah.
Do you mind? Brandon didn't know that we were going to do this, but we've actually got a part for Brandon to play in this as well.
Hey, everybody!
He's not going to do that the whole time, don't worry. Brandon, actually, the thing is, tonight...
Brandon, how did you get in between the two of us?
Yeah, just get right there
because
we go.
Because we have some experimental theater that's going to blow everyone's loads.
Literally. Okay. Well, the thing is, we were gonna do like a comedy like sketch thing, but then we decided instead, why don't we turn this stage into a dreamatorium?
Literally, a place where anything can happen, where anything is possible.
Yeah. Are you referencing the last Community episode?
Yeah.
It got canceled. Today.
No, we're not going to dwell on that, Brandon. We're not going to dwell on that. We're going to reach into our dream world.
Okay.
Have you ever been watching a show? You guys know what I'm talking about. Have you ever been watching a show? I just pointed randomly.
You
seem like a knowledgeable. Have you ever been watching a television show or movie film? And you think
I've watched a movie film.
I have. And you think I can do that better.
I can do it better.
I can play that part.
I have thought that.
Right. Yeah.
I have thought that.
So tonight we're gonna make your dreams come true in front of all these people and our own dreams.
And our own yeah.
And a little piece that we like to call
Who played it better? I don't know if that was discernible. My dream role. In any film in world history, including fiction and non-fiction films.
Documentaries?
Non-fiction films. Is a film from 2006. It is dubbed a romantic comedy, and it's known as Juana Man.
I am great for this one, brother.
Have you seen Juana Man?
No, I haven't seen Juana Man.
Follows the story of Miguel A. Nunez, who's had a stunning career afterwards. He gets kicked out for his outlandish behavior out of the UBA, the Universal Basketball Association, and gets forced to join a females basketball league by a shystery Jew agent.
Is that your role?
Played by Kevin Bob, Juana Penn, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
The scene as I envision it is when Juana Mann is playing in the playoffs for the Charlotte Banshees. And he dunks the basketball, which is completely unrealistic, because one woman could ever. They're just not athletically inclined.
Those are all true statements.
True facts.
And so he dunks the basketball.
Is this a nonfiction?
Smashes the backboard, and his wig falls off, exposing the fact that he is a man the entire time. And see.
I'm a other team basketball player.
No, you're the dog.
I'm the dog.
You're the dog! Slam dunk. Wig falls off.
What the fuck?
Exposed in front of the entire stadium as a man.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've been deceiving you the entire time. My name isn't Juana Mann. I know that that name is a really convincing name. Tommy Davidson, I know you've had a crush on me the entire film. There's a little bit of a homoeroticism. And I know that early 2000s comedies treat homosexuality with a certain, let's say, are you the dog now? Listen, in sports there comes a time where you gotta go out there and you gotta score the bucket. The question is, which bucket will you score? How many buckets could I score? Probably more if I'm playing against women. But I am a man. Juana Mann. And who played it better?
Just call 615-406-5948 and just leave a message and tell us which one of those was the best one. Thanks,
Anna. Yeah,
Anna Freeland, Peter Hyman, everybody. Coming to the stage, she's not Juana Mann. Please put your hands together, buddy, for Aaron Ryan. Yay!
Hey, guys, I'm Aaron Ryan, and I have a boyfriend. And I recently was using his computer, and I found his Google searches. This is just the D's.
Oh, no! Good letter.
Drunk animals. Do iPhones have buttons? Diaper jeans. Divorce, comma, Barbie and Ken. Daniel Ryan, that's my dad. Desperate Housewives fan fiction. And finally, Dancing with the Stars results show no spoilers. So anyways, I currently have a boyfriend. I don't know, but a little while later.
Please put your hands together, everybody, for SM Shrake, everybody. Yay, SM!
Thank you, Brandon, for having me. Thank you all. I love you. Thank you for being quiet up in front for the moment. I was in Detroit in a in a dive bar in the bathroom, looking in the mirror.
Perfection.
When this voice next to me says, "Excuse me, can I ask you something as a stranger?" Sure. Don't make eye contact. Don't make eye contact. I hate strangers. And then he says, "I mean, I was out there in the bar, and I saw this ex of mine from a long time ago, and I'm just feeling kind of insecure, and I'm just kind of wondering, like, how good looking am I?" So now I have to look, right? So I look. and he's got what I call Michigan face. He looks like everyone. In my life, he's got like a little cheese mustache and like a Kmart haircut or something. And then to help me out, so I'm pausing, thinking, looking at it. And to help me out, he goes, on a scale of 1 to 10,000. So I thought, Shrake, why don't you be nice to someone for once? Be nice to a stranger for once in your life. So I said, a hundred, because I thought one was the best. One wasn't the best. 10,000 was the best. So his response to me was, quote, fuck you, Jew bitch. Now, obviously, it's okay. I mean, the laugh's on him, because I'm not Jewish. I'm not Jewish.
Please put your hands together for Jessica Brodkin, everybody. Yay!
Man, that story really touched me on all the Jew stuff. it really did. No, because I'm a Jew, and it's weird. It's weird. It's weird being a Jew. Shit like can be offensive when people don't mean it. You know, like I was in a plant store, and I swear to God, you can look this up on your phones or whatever. There's a plant called the Wandering Jew. And so I got offended. I come up to the cashier. I'm like, you know you have a plant called the Wandering Jew. She's like, yes, I know. I'm like, do you have another one called the Fence Jumping Mexican? She's like, no, but he works here. You guys are ashamed to laugh at that. If I laugh, does that mean I'm racist? Yes, he does. Don't fucking laugh. Racist. It's okay. It happens sometimes. it's a really good time. So yeah, I'm a Jew and I'm from Brooklyn. Surprise. And hip hop culture is really big in Brooklyn, as you could imagine if you know anything about hip hop. My dad came home one day rocking a FUBU jumpsuit, and he's from Russia. He's like, it's for us by us. You're not part of the us, Dad. That's not for you.
You are. 10 cities. Flew to Minneapolis, went to Chicago, Madison, Indiana, St. Louis, Memphis, Johnson City, Charlottesville, Balmer, and then here. The road is a bitch, and it was wonderful to be back home. I'm happy to be here, so thank you.